Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute, a Fan Nation college football podcast brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and today I'm joined by a new face, JD Andrus. He's one of our fellow writers. JD, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, Brett. Happy to be here. First time.
Yeah. So, hey, since it is your first time, let's let the people listening know who you are, kind of your background, maybe ties to TCU and how you got here.
So I'm JD, like you said. I was born and raised here in Fort Worth, went to high school, you know, less than 5 miles from TCU. I grew up less than 5 miles, lived less than 5 miles. So TCU's always been basically in my backyard. They're my backyard team. Growing up, my dad's diehard Longhorns fan. And I don't, you know, always something about the little guy, the little team in Fort Worth. I always loved TCU. They're my team. And so fell in love with them. I mean, purple's the best color anyway, so looks good on anything. And then, you know, one of my friends and I were talking sports one day, and he was like, "Hey, man, have you ever thought about writing about sports?" And I was like, "Not anything I've ever done, but, like, I think it'd be cool." And one thing led to another, and then I joined the team, and now I'm writing for Killer Frogs.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you. I'm happy to have you on the podcast here. JD and I are similar-minded in that we ruin things with math and numbers. We won't get too far down that rabbit hole. We'll save that for the offline conversations, of course. But today, JD, you are joining me to preview the upcoming game at Houston. TCU, you know, week one didn't go well. Everybody watched it, you know, got shocked, 20 and a half point favorites losing outright. And then you roll in, you host Nichols, kind of a get right game. I don't even know if it's a get right game. You know, it's like playing the local junior college, you know, for a payday. So I think this game against Houston's really interesting because I think it's going to give us a good gauge as to what we're getting from the Horned Frogs this coming season. And you know, let's just dive right into it. Let's just get dirty right away. I want to start with TCU's defense against Houston's offense. Houston's offense, I think I know more about this side of the ball, but given the two games that they played, there's a lot of question marks. Donovan Smith is their quarterback. He's the Texas Tech transfer. He played, started a bit for the Red Raiders past couple of years. Now he's a quarterback one for the Cougars. Tony Mathis, that should be a familiar name to those who follow Big 12 football. He's a West Virginia transfer who's now the lead back there, but he's only received 8 carries in each of the two first games that he's played. Interestingly, I thought they'd use him more as a workhorse back, but they're spreading out a bit more. And that could be because head coach Dana Holgorsen, he's calling the offensive plays. He assumed that role over the offseason after the offensive coordinator left. 22 seconds of play. That's the 13th fastest pace in the country. So Houston does not waste any time. It's a lot like Colorado. They get up to the line. They snap the ball real quick. They're about high volume, kind of high success rate. Not many 80-yard plays that they're relying on here to score on you. It's a lot of wearing you down, a lot of chunk plays. But one thing to note, this right side of the offensive line for Houston, it is a problem. They've allowed 42% of all the pressures on Smith just from the right guard and the right tackle. Zero pressures have come from the left side. So if you're attacking this team, you really want to come at them from their right side of the offensive line. It is very clearly weaker, and that is shown through the first two games. But the quarterback not helping these guys out either. He's 12th in the country in pressures allowed that you contribute to the quarterback. So holding onto the football too long, stepping up into pressure, bailing too early, et cetera, those kind of mistakes the quarterbacks can make. PFF, Pro Football Focus, counts that up and counts it against him. And he's one of the higher percentage quarterbacks in the country that's getting himself into trouble on his own. Now, I asked this ahead of the Colorado game, at what point are we concerned with the TCU defense on Saturday?
Based off of what we saw Houston perform against Rice last week, which, yeah, with the overtime, it ended up being a higher scoring game. With how they started against Rice, I think anything more than, I'll say, 350 total yards of offense is kind of going to be a letdown. I mean, we held Nicholls State to 263 yards. And I think that's just kind of like a happy median. Of course, that could change if TCU comes up to a big lead and they're, you know, just passing the ball and we're running soft coverage, allowing it, then that changes it. But I really don't think there's any reason to worry about TCU's defense at all. We saw them against Nichols, I mean, yeah, it's Nichols. It's like playing the school for the deaf and blind, and that's kind of an insult to the deaf and blind. But they, I mean, they played well. The coverages were there. I mean, it's still the issue that coming into the season we had and we saw last season is the defensive line. We can't get any pressures, which is interesting. But I think what made the defense look bad is we're in a new season with new clock rules and everyone's offense productions has been down, how many plays they're running specifically. But interestingly enough, TCU's running on average six more plays per game than we did last season with Garrett Riley's offense. And I think that when we played Colorado, our defense was on the field way more than they needed to be. And when you're playing at the beginning of September and it's 110 degrees, like, even though we practice for it, your body's going to wear down naturally. And I think that makes our defense look way more, you know, like they could be exploited than they actually are. And I think this weekend we're going to see a whole new side, and we're kind of going to leave that game being like, okay, that's the defense we expected. And every week that, you know, we're going and going, Colorado looks like the real deal, man. I mean, like I've, you know, mentioned before in multiple of my articles, is we could be week eight in the season and be like, dang, the fact that that was 45-42 is impressive game. Like, Colorado might just be it. I you know, but I really think 350 yards of total offense from Houston, and I'm looking at the defense of being like, okay, maybe we should shake things up. We got to figure something out about a D-line with no pressures. So I think at that point, that's when there's cause for worry.
I think I'm gonna have a shorter leash than that. I think if they don't come out in the first quarter and look prepared, I'm gonna be concerned. Because that, in my opinion, my assessment of watching the game against Colorado, they were not prepared. They were confused. They were surprised that Colorado was fast and getting the ball to the perimeter. Gillespie looked like he's never seen an offense like Sean Lewis's. And to be fair, not a lot of people in the country run an offensive system as clean and efficient and fast as Sean Lewis does. But what were you guys doing for the past few months? You know, I ranted about this a little bit on the last podcast that you have film from Kent State. And no, it's not Colorado's guys and is different. It's against MAC teams, stuff like that. But they looked like they didn't even know what colors that Colorado was going to show up in. I thought they were completely unprepared. So if I see them on the first couple of drives, first quarter, still looking lost, still looking not prepared, I mean, that falls on Gillespie at that point. And that's when I'm going to be concerned.
But I think even then, even to go more of a stretch that way, TCU's defense under Gillespie in the last, I think it's like after the Colorado game, it was like the last 11 games, TCU's defense was giving up on average like 43 points per game it was. And that, you know, even includes if you take the outlier out of the national championship. So like you take that out, we're still giving up 43 points. And I think last year's offense kind of bailed out Gillespie a little bit more. And I talked about that coming into the season, is that I think he's going to be on a little bit hotter seat than people anticipated, because with the returning production that we had in the secondary this year in the linebacking position, we shouldn't have been giving up that many points to begin with against Colorado.
No, and I even went out and said that I thought that the TCU's defense could be the stronger of the two units, and through one usable game, like you said, no offense to Nichols, but I have Nichols rated as the 59th best FCS team. That's not great. Not exactly South Dakota State that they're playing. But, you know, I said that maybe the defense could be stronger than the offense. That just has not been the case through the one. And I get it. It's a first game of the season against a team that may be, well, is a lot better than a lot of expectations, but maybe legitimately very good. So that's why I think Houston's going to be a good game to watch. They run fast. Like I said, the 13th fastest pace right now, it's actually technically faster than Colorado's, but Colorado got off to a slow first half start against Nebraska, whatever. Let's be clear. This is not Colorado's offense. Travis Hunter is not walking out that tunnel. Shedeur Sanders is not lining up across from TCU this Saturday. All respect to Donovan Smith here. They just don't have the same personnel. So if you're thinking about a worst case scenario for TCU's defense, I know you said you'd be concerned with 350 yards, but worst case scenario for TCU's defense, let's say first half, what does it look like?
I think first half, what it looks like is explosive plays happening from Houston. I think if you're going to allow long drives you know, they're going to get chip gains, 5 yard rushes constantly, then that's fine. I mean, obviously still cause to worry, but if we're giving up explosive plays, the secondary's busting coverages like they did against Colorado, or even against Colorado, what I saw a lot was we're playing deep soft coverage and we're still getting burned on vertical routes, which was a big worry. And I think if we see that happen again, that, you know, after the first quarter, I'm like, all right, you know, panic button, let's reset something.
Yeah, Houston has not been giving, has not been breaking off explosive plays so far. Mm-hmm. I define explosive play as 20 plus yards. I know there's different between explosive runs and passes. Just for the sake of the argument, let's just say 20 plus yards. They have 9 of those through their 2 games this season. That's good enough. Tied for 68th with like a million other teams, but they're not by any stretch of the imagination an explosive offense, at least not from what they've shown this year against UTSA, who's been playing solid defense, but not the best defense, and Rice, who is, good God, if I'm a Houston fan, I'm pulling my hair out over that Rice game. That, like, you're in the Big 12 now. Those are not games you're supposed to lose, especially, yeah, you're on the quote-unquote road, but it's in your same city. You went 15 blocks over to go play Rice. Personally, I need to see better execution from the defensive front. Colorado's offensive line was bad, and TCU's offense or defensive line, pardon me, at times made them look not so bad, especially on that one goal line where they stuck in that defensive lineman or whoever it was at the fullback and cracked down on the linebacker and blew him right off the ball. I mean, that's not Colorado's offensive line. They're bad. Metrically, they're terrible. And TCU's defensive front really didn't take advantage of them like I think they probably should have. But again, Sean Lewis was really good about getting to the edge and getting ball out in space and all that kind of stuff. I also want to see this. This is just nitpicky, but it matters. I need to see better pursuit angles from the secondary. You know, Houston doesn't have Dylan Edwards. They don't have a 5'9 guy that runs a high 4'2 40. But guys, we got to be taking better angles than that. You can't be surprised when a Division I football player, especially wide receivers, fast. And to me, that looked like they were surprised that Dylan Edwards was fast. That tells me you weren't watching film and you don't know who you're lining up against. But let's flip to the other side. Let's see TCU's offense against Houston's defense. Houston's defense so far has been very inconsistent in their 2 games. Against UTSA, they held them to just 14 points, which at the time seemed pretty good because UTSA's offense was very good last year. But this year, man, I don't know. Their offense might be bad because they went and scored 20 points against Texas State, who not the best defense in the country, that's for sure. Frank Harris, their quarterback's a little bit beat up too. Either way, they gave up 14 points the first game. Then the second game, Rice, as we alluded, they allowed 28 first quarter points and 43 in total, including overtime. I'd be concerned if I'm giving up 43 to Rice. JT Daniels, an old friend from the Big 12 and the SEC and the Pac-12, because he's been in college football for 55 years for 10 different teams, threw for over 400 yards on this Cougars secondary last week. Houston had really trouble covering anybody. Rice had 2 receivers over 80 yards, 1 more with 70 yards. But, you know, I need to see better execution from Chandler Morris before I think he's going to be able to fully take advantage of the secondary. Amani Bailey, special shout out to him, carrying the ball this year has just been electric. He has the 4th most yards after contact on average. If you're looking at running backs that have 20 or more rushes, 5.4 yards every single time that he's touching the ball, he's getting an extra 5 yards on average after contact. And Houston is actually like one of the worst tackling teams. They're bottom 25 in tackling grades according to Pro Football Focus so far. One injury note that I do want to mention, JP Richardson, I heard he's back at practice. He should be good to go this Saturday. I know there was some concerns about him being banged up. What say you about the TCU offense here?
On the JP Richardson report, JP Richardson, Dylan Wright, and Savion Williams were all reportedly practicing this week. Great. So they all 3 should be a go for Saturday since they were held out last week. It's like you said, I mean, UTSA could be a bad offense, but what Houston defense shows up. I mean, I think TCU is going to take advantage of it. The only interesting thing is the spread for this game set at 7.5, and the over-under set at 63, which means they're not really expecting that high scoring of a game. It's kind of going to be a competitive, like, 35-28 game, and that's kind of worries me a little bit. Like, what does Vegas know about this defense that I haven't seen? Because by, you know, all reports, TCU's offense should take a lot of advantage of this defense this weekend. I think Chandler Morris is going to prove this week he is the guy. I mean, he went 16 for 20 last week. Really could have finished 18 for 20 had he not had two drops in the first drive. And I think he's going to prove that. He's finally coming into using his legs. He's not Max Duggan. He won't be Max Duggan. Max Duggan was last year. We'll never get him back. We have Chandler Morris, and we have to accept that. And I think this week it's going to be a lot easier to accept that. I think he's going to take advantage of it. He's settling into the offense. If Kendall Briles can call it, you know, reasonable game this week and learn how to distribute or learn to, you know, not run the typical, all right, we're going to run on first down, we're going to run on second down. They didn't work. Let's pass on third. Everyone knows what's coming. Or a little screen plays on a first and 15 that we don't need. I think that TCU's offense should have a really good game. I honestly, truly think Chandler Morris is going to throw for over 350 yards. I think he's going to come out and we're going to – Houston's secondary isn't that good, like, at all. And I think Houston's going to key in on the run because our offense kind of goes as the run goes. Once you have them start stacking the box, you know, you're going to start being able to feast on wide receiver routes. And we have the athletes out there. We have seven guys that are all – that all could be starters for a lot of the other schools in Big 12. And I think once they're, you know, we're going to come out and our passing attack is going to be there. And I think Chandler Morris will have his great game that we've been waiting for him to have. And I mean, to be fair, he did play great against Colorado. Like, he didn't play fantastic, but all things considered, once, you know, I went back and rewatched the game, I was like, you know what? The Travis Hunter interception was incredible. That's a one out of 100 play that gets made.
Not Chandler Morris's fault at all.
The Jared Wiley interception on the first touch or red zone attempt, that was his fault. He missed the whistle. But other than that, he played a great game. And now if he's going to come into using his legs a lot more often, I think he's set up for a beautiful position.
The one thing I wanted to mention about you, you said that, you know, it's a 7.5 point line on the road. What does Vegas know? The odds maker setting that number isn't what scares me. It's the fact that people with supercomputers the size of my house didn't move that number because they didn't bet it, because they looked at it and said, yeah, that's about right. That's what scares me in the betting market. It's a little nitpicky thing, but that's my profession. That's my space. It's just, that's what worries me a little bit more. You talk about the play calling. I said it before. I thought Briles called a disgusting game, like an offensive to all five senses type of game. And the fact that he's already a controversial, to put it very nicely, hire for TCU, to come out here and call that kind of game, I think is downright inexcusable. Not a great start to the TCU tenure at all. Like you said, running screens on first and 15. Run. Okay, now we're going to pass it in obvious passing situations. That's not stuff you saw from Garrett Riley. And Garrett Riley's not exactly over there in Clemson, South Carolina, tearing it up on offense. I think it almost looks like Sonny Dykes has handed the keys a little bit too much over to his offensive coordinator this time around. Instead of saying, hey, this is my system, you can put your spin on it. And, you know, Kendall Briles looked lost. When it was second and two, and he looked in the backfield and realized he didn't have 6'2", 240 KJ Jefferson to run quarterback power or counter gap with him, he didn't really know what to do. So he's throwing flanker screens and flash bubbles and stuff like that. That's just like, okay, they know it's coming. They see it. And I didn't understand the desire to get the ball to the edge. That's what you do when you're like Colorado, outsized on the front and outmanned in the front seven. Instead of just lining up and saying, we have a better line of scrimmage than you, I'm going to drive you 5 yards off the ball, which they're consistently able to do. He got the ball to the edge, and all of a sudden, Colorado's athletes out-athleted TCU's athletes. So I'd like to see that not happen. I really hope that was just a mistake in the game planning and he learns from it. Because if you're going to be not running behind this offensive line and trying to get the ball to the edge all season long, when you play Texas, when you play Oklahoma and all these teams that are extremely athletic, that's just not going to cut it. Like, you're not going to score points, and it's going to be a miserable season for that. I haven't actually gotten a good opportunity to vent about what I thought Briles did in that game. So I'm sorry, JD, but you are on the receiving end of this.
No, and I think one thing that you touched on that a lot of is just kind of going unnoticed is the offensive line kind of came into the season and had a little bit of question marks. Kevin, we were filling three out of the five, you know, replacements. And this season, they performed better than I expected. I mean, we're one of seven teams that hasn't allowed a sack all season. Amani Bailey's a great rusher, and it's a lot of the credits to the offensive line. I mean, they bullied Colorado's defensive line, which I fully expected, kept it going against Nicholls State. And I think this week, they won't necessarily bully Houston defensive line, but the line of scrimmage difference will be noticeable throughout the game. And I think that will be a key factor into this week's game as well, is Chandler Morris has had two games now where he kind of touched on it after the Colorado game, but he had a mental block about using his legs at, post-injury with the knee, like not wanting to get hurt again. And I think that's a big part of why he's going to have a big week, is he's at that comfortable stage. He's had 2 weeks of not taking a sack. He's protecting his body on runs. He was sliding early last week. And I think that's what's going to allow him to fully develop into this quarterback that we're expecting to see.
Yeah, it's going to be a tougher battle in the trenches this week by 15-fold. Phil Steele ranks Houston's defensive front third best in the entire Big 12 coming into the game. And I still think it's early enough in the season for that to be actionable information and advice. Mm-hmm. But when you look at their linebacking core and their secondary, well, he ranks their secondary dead last in the Big 12. So that's what, contrary to what we were thinking against Colorado, that's what you need to get with Houston here. So maybe getting the ball to the edge will work this week or something. Maybe trying to throw the ball down the field. But yeah, I mean, the offensive line has to hold up, or when Chandler Morris is pressured, bad things happen. So
yeah,
continue to keep them clean. Again, Colorado's defensive front, not great. Nicholls State, not even a Division I opponent really that they're playing there. So it's, we haven't really seen them tested yet. But when you're talking about Houston, even SMU, who I thought played really well against Oklahoma defensively, shocker, who would have thought that upcoming? You're gonna have to shore up, put your big boy pants on and fasten the belt, because we're in for a tougher stretch than TCU's had through the first two games here. My bottom line here, I just need a better call game from both coordinators. Briles, atrocious. Gillespie, I thought, was equally atrocious in the first game. I'm not really saying much about the Nicholls State game. I don't know how much you can really pull from there. It's a varsity team playing a JV team. I don't take a lot from it. But that Colorado game, I keep harping on it. They looked unprepared on both sides of the ball. And I do think we're going to end up learning quite a bit about TCU here. We've had a tough sample size. We've had one real game, one not real game. What's your temperature on Chandler Morris so far? We touched on it a little bit, but overall, where are you at with him?
So, like you just said, you can't really take much from the Nicholls State game. But what I wanted to see was, can he put what happened in the Colorado game and just kind of let it go and come into this game and not look rattled, not look like he's trying to take that first throw that's immediately there. He's going to be looking for a better option. And I think we saw that. First drive alone, he had two drops. He was kind of driving. He was making great throws throughout the game. His decision-making was a lot better. And he's using his legs. I mean, he had a 32-yard touchdown run that was beautiful. I mean, his acceleration was great. He's cutting up field. And at this point, post-Colorado game, immediate reaction was Chandler Morris isn't the guy. He's just not it. And rewatching the game, I was like, you know what? I think maybe he is it. And can't really take much for the Nicholls State game. But at this point, I'm ready to ride with Chandler Morris until he proves that he really isn't the guy. I'm willing to give him, 2 to 3 bad drives in a row before I'm like, all right, you know what? Let's try something else. Because, like he had mentioned himself, is he had a mental block. He had a lot going on. I mean, coming when you haven't played football in over a year, and then you have the starting position taken from you even when you were healthy, like that's a big thing to overcome. And I think that now that he's settling in, I think he's going to be our guy this year. And I think he's going to have a great season overall.
All right, to close this out, I thought that was a pretty solid, thorough review of what to expect here on Saturday against Houston. I want to bring up four other games that are on the slate, and we're going to do a quick pick 'em. Just win or lose. You can give a couple of sentences of your reasoning here. Kansas State at Missouri. Who wins this game?
Missouri.
Oh, I'm going to go Kansas State.
I think Dershowitz is putting him in a good position right now. I think, and Kansas State, a lot of their production didn't return as much as people think it did. that we haven't seen the first two games, that I think Missouri pulls this one out.
Okay, my bank account hopes you're wrong. Let's go.
Mine hopes I'm right.
Minnesota at North Carolina.
North Carolina. This one's easy. I don't know what's going on with the boats over there, but they're not rowing.
No, that offense is dreadful when you don't have 37-year Tanner Morgan conducting the offense. I do like the transfer pieces that they brought in. They have a couple of really good receivers. Athan Kalikomanis, by the way, I love throwing it out there because that's one I do know how to pronounce. Pretty solid at times, but yeah, I think I'm going with the home team there with the better quarterback. Give me UNC. Tennessee at Florida, big SEC rivalry.
Tennessee. What's going on at Florida is just not looking good. And Florida's coach actually came from where I went to school, so I got to see. I've been watching him coach for a while now, and he's a great coach at Louisiana Lafayette. But then I don't know what's going on, but Florida's just not. And they have players transferring out right now. I think Tennessee wins this by 2 touchdowns minimum.
Yeah, I think Napier is a little bit in over his skis. There's, you know, good NFL coaches. There's good big time program college coaches, and there's really good small time program college coaches. I think Napier falls in that final category back there. I will also take the Volunteers because you will never catch me betting on Graham Mertz. And then one of my favorite rivalries, you can see a towel from last year's edition right over my shoulder here for those that are watching us. Pitt at West Virginia, the backyard brawl, nasty, nasty rivalry. This one's actually so closely contested. Pitt's like a point favorite or it's a pick 'em. I mean, it's a toss up. Who do you think wins this game, JD?
I've been tossing with this one all week. The line was at Pitt, you know, as 1 point favorite, then it goes to pick 'em. I'm going Pitt. I have no rhyme or reason for it. Just because of how closely contested it is. I just think Pitt's a lot better than we think. And I know last week that kind of wasn't the case. A lot of people thought they were going to be better, and then they kind of came out last week, laid a little bit of an egg. But I think this week you have that happen. You have a heated rivalry. I think Pitt gets back in the conversation, you know, this week, and they prove what's right.
Yeah, I will also take Pitt. Morgantown is a difficult place to play when the fans are on the side of the Mountaineers. But the fans are not on the side of Neil Brown at the moment. They wanted him gone yesterday. And I'm counting it down. This is 3 weeks until we think we see Neil Brown part, because West Virginia plays Pitt, who I believe will win. And then they host Texas Tech. And then they come to Fort Worth, Texas to play at TCU before going into a much-needed bye week. So if we're looking for an opportunity for Neil Brown to be canned, I think this is it, and I think this Pitt game really gets things rolling after they were drubbed by Penn State. So,
oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute College Football Podcast. You can find us at killerfrogs.com, on Twitter, at killerfrogs. I am at Road to CFB, and you can find JD at JD Andress, Andress, 11. And continue this conversation over on Facebook. Who do you have winning this week? Whether it be in our pick 'em games at the end here or the headlining TCU at Houston as Big 12 play opens up here in early September. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on your podcasting app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use these days. Drop us a review, as that's going to be the best way for us to grow and reach more Big 12, TCU, and college football fans as a whole. Check back next week for the next episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I am Brett Gibbons. That's JD Andress, and we'll catch you all next time.